what's up? Welcome to the OKB's podcast, episode 6. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adelia. Joining me this week is, I still don't have a nickname for him, Ian Prichelle. What's up, Ian?
What's up, man? We should try and, like, ask the people what a good nickname is. It's been a struggle my entire life.
That is actually a really good idea. That is actually a really good idea. We could, like, do a tweet and, like, get Mayumi to figure out something for you. Because I'm sure people out there can make a really good name for you. Because there are definitely adjectives that can be used to describe you. I know that for sure.
I hope so.
Yeah. How are you doing? You doing good?
I'm good. Went on a little hiatus for a little bit. Went to Los Angeles. Went to New York. Went to Philadelphia. I went all over. And I've been playing some games. And I've been reading some comic books. And just doing a bunch of things.
Dude, it's been 3 episodes without you. Yeah, which is funny because this is episode 6, and so it's like people listen to this are like, oh yeah, this Ian guy is still on this podcast.
Where'd that Ian guy go? Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, it's been like, a hot...
he left after episode
3. It's been a hot minute.
Yeah, dude. You've been missed, and like we haven't been talking about... I was going to say we haven't talked about Persona 4 in a while,
we just
but
talked
like
for
before
a
this
hour.
Podcast... yeah, we talked about it for a straight hour, which is typical. But at least it wasn't on the podcast, and so we can keep this train moving. For those listening, if you're not familiar with OK Beast is a brand dedicated to games, culture, and looking at how games fit within our culture. The OK Beast podcast is a gaming-centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. If you like that, you can subscribe to us on your podcast service of choice. That is iTunes. That is Google Play. That is listening to us on OKBeast.com. Visit OKBeast.com and follow at OKBeast Now on Twitter if you'd like to keep up. Ian.
Yes, sir.
What have you been up to this week as far as whatever? Or for the last 3 weeks even, since we haven't spoken to you in a while.
Yeah, so I had no PS4 when I was back home in America. Because again, if you don't remember, I live out here in Japan. All my stuff is out here. So I've been playing mainly a lot of portable games, and I've been reading a lot of comics. And I've been trying to get back into older games and stuff like that. So... what I've been playing is, Bless just mentioned it, but I just finished Persona 4 Golden on the Vita. I restarted Pokemon Y on the 3DS. I've been playing Freedom Wars and Monster Hunter. And I just bought Deus Ex Mankind Divided. And I played a little bit, like 30 minutes to 2 or 3 hours of No Man's Sky.
Ooh, we have a lot to talk about because I definitely want to talk about Deus Ex Mankind Divided. But before we get to that, I definitely want to hear, give us your thoughts on No Man's Sky, because what I want to do, the last couple weeks, we've talked about No Man's Sky with Alex Van Aken and Everstar, and so I want to get your thoughts, and I might splice it into a video of you three guys talking about No Man's Sky and your different opinions and whatnot. I know you don't own the game, but you played a lot of the game, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, my friend and I played a decent chunk of it. But remind me before we do this, I want to... have you ever heard of a Nuzlocke before in Pokemon?
I've heard of it. I have no idea what it is. It sounds like it's kind of like maybe a survival mode like they'd have in Fallout 4.
Yes. So I'll explain that when I'm done with the No Man's Sky thing. So,
okay.
So No Man's Sky, I was not particularly hyped about this game before it came out. I am not a huge space guy, to be honest with you. The only space game I've really connected with was Mass Effect 2. So when I saw this game, I was like, all right, that seems like a really interesting game. Might be overhyped, but whatever. So when I go back to America, I go to my friend's house. He downloads it. And we're playing it, but we're playing it in a group. We're not playing it alone. So we kind of did this weird, like, role-playing situation where he was, like, the captain of the ship and I was the research officer. So he was, like, Captain Kirk, if you know Star Trek, and I was Leonard Nimoy's character, Spock. So, like, I would do all of the resource management, he would do all of the movement, and he would do all of the flying. And I would record, like, all right, this thing is where we'll get this resource. This thing is where I'll get this. I'll name all the creatures. You name the planet. You know, like, so we had this, like, weird meta-narrative where, like, we were these two explorers on this ship trying to find something. And we had no idea. We were, like, a team as opposed to a singular, lonely vessel, you know? Mm-hmm. And... in that way, I think that the game is really awesome because No Man's Sky, from what I gathered, doesn't really give you a lot to work with, if that makes any sense. It doesn't hold your hand in almost any way. So the issue is that that's great for some people because some people are very imaginative. Other people require more of a narrative thread to push them forward. But in the case of my friend and I, we had this cool conversation going back and forth of like, all right, Captain, let's do this. All right, what's this planet name? Oh, what do you think's going on with this? Like, it was this ever-evolving conversation. We were always talking and asking questions to one another. Like, oh, like, what do you think the Vex are doing? What do you think this means? What do you think this means? But I can see why, if I didn't have another person to talk to and, like, have this kind of split relationship, split responsibility, how the game can be viewed as extremely tedious and kind of frustrating and, you know, doesn't do enough, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I only played it for, like, 2 or 3 hours. I didn't really see those, like, small cracks that people were talking about. Like, I've heard almost every podcast I listen to talk about, like, the more you play it, the more you see, like, behind the curtain, kind of, like, what these different planets, how they're not that different, how, like, some creatures are hard to scan, you have, like, all these sort of small things. Angry Joe's video comes to mind with someone who was very frustrated about the game towards the end. And I think it's a game where it's good, if you're into that sort of thing, if you're into space, sit down with someone, sit down with, like, your mom, sit down with, like, someone you know, maybe someone who's not even that into video games, and just have them, like, look at the game and be like, whoa, what's that? Like, oh, like, you don't have it be, like, a exploratory journey with someone else. Because I feel like alone, I wouldn't be able to play that game. But with my friend, I thought it was an amazing experience.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't played it still. I don't plan on playing. I don't have it. But yeah, I watched that. I watched a lot of videos about it. I watched Angry Joe's review video on it. And that actually, like, kind of, like, opened up my mind, like, a lot of the things that seem to be wrong about the game. And I say this as somebody who hasn't played the game, and somebody who's making prejudgments not playing the game. But during the sort of marketing cycle of this game, I kind of had my theories that, like, this is just going to kind of go wrong in terms of promises that were made that I was like, there's no way these promises can be kept. And sort of the not being clear about multiplayer, not being clear about certain features of the game, that kind of struck me as the thing that was probably going to happen with this. Angry Joe's review is a pretty good one, I think. But also, like, I also think, like, people who have positive things to say about the game also have very valid points. Like, Danny O'Dwyer off GameSpot had a video about No Man's Sky, which made me really want to play the game, which was about the atmosphere of the game and sort of how it reminds him of the more quieter parts of Fallout or the more quieter parts of maybe Mass Effect, or like these games where the non-actiony parts where it's just experiencing an environment and taking everything in. He was sort of talking about how No Man's Sky is basically that. And he didn't mention this, but I feel like he could have mentioned even Shadow of the Colossus, because Shadow of the Colossus was a large part of that. Of on your way to fighting a colossus, you are experiencing this huge field and this huge environment and sort of taking it in. But yeah, I think No Man's Sky seems to be really interesting. Is there anything else? Yeah, I mean, you have to say about it. Does it feel like it's a game for you or no?
Is it a game for me? Again, I don't know. It's hard to say. I only played a little bit of it. But I actually also saw the Danny O'Dwyer video, and that feeling, I feel like, was totally present when I was playing it. But again, I only played it for a short amount of time. Is it a game for me? Okay. No. But then again, I feel like it's all a matter of perspective. It's all about what you think going into it. So I came in with very low expectations because I knew this wasn't going to be a game for me. And then when I played it, I was pleasantly surprised because I didn't put any of these crazy expectations on it. Or maybe not crazy expectations, because those expectations were set by the creator of the game months and months and months ahead. But I think if you play it in a group of people, like 2 people, 3 people, it can be a cool, interesting scenario that can be played like 2 or 3 hours at a time. But if you're investing, if you plan on putting in like 100 hours in this game, I think you're going to be disappointed.
Nice. And you're playing Freedom Wars, which I find hilarious because I plan to play Freedom Wars right after I beat Persona 4.
Yeah.
And you also actually mentioned earlier, and we won't get into this because we just talked about it for an hour before this podcast, and also we don't need to spend every podcast talking about Persona 4. But I also kind of beat Persona 4.
I mean,
and I mean, Here's the thing, and I'm just gonna say this. I don't want to spoil it at all because we're gonna have a Persona 4 spoiler cast hopefully next week, because hopefully I'll beat it by next week. And even if I don't beat it, we're still talking about it because we practically beat it. Yeah. Maybe, I don't know. Persona 4 made me realize that I cannot stand multiple endings. And if you listen to this podcast, you already kind of know that there's multiple endings because somebody named Eberstar might have ruined that. Maybe not ruined. Ruined might be the wrong word. Are you swallowing like a whale or something over there?
Oh, no, sorry. I was cracking my knuckles. My bad.
Oh, okay. All I heard was like a swallowing sound. I thought somebody was dying. But yeah, Persona 4 has multiple endings, and I won't go into it, but like 2 out of 3 of those endings kind of suck and kind of ruin the game, and the third ending is really hard to get. And we, for this podcast, we kind of talked about how, like, just kind of get to the point. As an update to my Persona 4 experience, I still love the game. I think the game is probably in my top 10 games. I'm still thinking about it. I'm still taking my time to digest it. I'm still taking my time to finish it truly, quote unquote, and see. But so far, man, like, that game does such amazing things with story and mechanics, and how it mixes story with mechanics and the things like the extracurricular things it allows you to do. I don't mean that literally as in like extracurricular activities in the school, because it does have that, but I also mean like just like a bunch of the side things you can do, which are kind of funny, because like I feel like the side quests in that game, like the literal side quests in that game, to me aren't that good. But like the things apart from the side quest, so like social links, which is like how you interact with other characters and kind of build up like your levels with your social link, I guess, with your other characters, that stuff is really great. Your like the different things you can do, you could like read to level up certain attributes, you can eat to level up certain attributes, you can do different things on different days, and the way the game progresses, amazing. And I don't know where I was at the last time I spoke about Persona 4 on this podcast, but just wanted to put that out there. What else have you been playing, Ian?
I mentioned Monster Hunter, I mentioned Pokemon, I mentioned Freedom Wars, like you said, and then I actually bought Severed.
Oh, really?
On the Vita? Yeah, I bought Severed on the Vita.
How do you like it?
I think it's okay. There are some things, like, again, when you come from Persona 4 to another game, it's all about, like, what I said before. It's about, like, expectations and your perspective going into something. So when I went into Severed, I had that Persona 4 golden mindset, which was not good. Because that shifted my perception of it. But overall, it's interesting visually. It's interesting story-wise. It's cool. But I want to take a step back from my Vita because of Persona and like allow myself to kind of like, all right, Persona was a game. Not every game will be like that on the Vita, and then like then come back to it, you know?
Do you like Freedom Wars?
I do, but I also don't.
Interesting. I'm really interested in it because when I first heard about Freedom Wars, I was really like hyped on it. I didn't have a Vita, but I heard about it from Greg Miller on Podcast Beyond because he kept hyping it up. And I don't think he was really hyping it up, rather than he was just kind of like talking about it a lot because it was an exclusive game on the Vita. And I was kind of in my mind when he was talking about it, I was kind of like comparing it in my mind to Persona 4, which I hadn't played at the time, and seeing like, okay, when I get a Vita, I got to get Freedom Wars, I got to get Persona 4, I got to get this, I got to get that. And I kind of started off with Persona 4, which might have been a bad idea going into other games because Persona 4 is just a phenomenal game. Yes. I'm going to try and go into Freedom Wars with lowered expectations. I still hope it's a good game, because if it's not a good game, I'm not going to play it. I'm going to stop playing it. But so, yeah, that's a game.
Yeah. Mm. So I think it's a good game, but the problem is that it borrows mechanics from one of my favorite games, but my favorite game, Monster Hunter, does those same mechanics better. So when I went into it, I was like, okay, this world is cool, the setting is interesting, like, the setup for the game is good, but the game that I just came from does those things a little bit better. So that's also, again, a matter of perception and all that, and tempering expectations before you play something. But
gotcha.
Real quick, before we get into the actual stuff, a Nuzlocke. So a Nuzlocke for Pokemon, like I mentioned before, is it's for Pokemon fans who have beat the games over and over again, and it's essentially just playing Pokemon with more strict rules. So what you do is, a Nuzlocke, for people who don't know, is the rules are as follows. You can only catch Pokemon when you go to a new area. And every time you catch a Pokemon, you have to nickname them. And when they die, they faint, they die for real, and you can't use them anymore.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, so the whole point of it is that you develop a stronger bond with your Pokemon, you train them harder, like you overlevel. It becomes almost like a traditional Japanese RPG. Because in like a Final Fantasy, in a Persona, you have limited party members. And sometimes you're in a position where, like, if you bring, in Persona, if you bring characters that only have ice moves, and you come with someone who's strong against ice, you're fucked, and you need to go back, you know? And that's kind of what Nuzlocking does. Nuzlocking limits your resources and makes you have a stronger connection with those Pokemon that you have. Yeah, so...
Interesting.
Yeah, so right now my team, I'm replaying Pokemon Y. My team is a Froakie named Koga, because the final evolution of Froakie is a ninja. Koga is a popular ninja in Japanese folklore. I have a Pidgey named Goku, because I imagined, like, when I saw the Pidgey's hair, it reminded me of, like, a Super Saiyan haircut. So I have that. Then I have a Psyduck named Saitama, and Saitama is the character from One Punch Man, obviously. And if you look at Psyduck, he kind of has that face where he looks kind of like out of it. He looks stupid. So I have Saitama. And then my last one is a... I don't know if you played the games that had this Pokemon in it, but it was called Pansage. It's a green...
I've never heard of that.
It's a green, like, monkey.
Okay.
And it has grass powers. Guess what I named that motherfucker.
Green monkey with grass powers. Tell me. Let me know.
Harambe.
Of course. I should have known.
And now, Harambe will take his revenge on the Pokemon world.
I should have known. That sounds... Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have put it past me. You should have put it past me, man.
It's 2016.
You can't see me, podcast listeners, but I'm smiling from ear to ear. Oh, man. This meme gets me every time. Oh, man.
Are you going to try the fan-made Pokemon game that came out a couple weeks ago?
Pokemon Uranium?
Yeah.
There's a whole big...
Because I have it downloaded.
Oh, you do?
But I haven't installed it yet, because I don't know if I downloaded the right thing. Yeah. I downloaded it off a forum, and it's like just like a setup thing, but it's literally like just like an unnamed setup. And so I'm like, I don't know.
You're
if
afraid?
I should click this. Yeah.
I've played other Pokemon fan games before. I played one, I forget what it was called, but the story, most Pokemon fan games, what they try to do is they try and make the story have more stakes and more adult. And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. Like, for example, the Pokemon fan game that I played, again, the name is blanking on me for some reason. In this world, there's, like, Pokemon cults that, like, have people who have these entire religions based off of Pokemon. And the introduction to the game is you get captured, and then you find out one of these Pokemon cults is sacrificing people and killing people and sacrificing them to a Pokemon.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and I saw that setup, and I was like, okay, interesting. And from what I hear about Uranium, it's a similar situation where the story has more stakes. There's new fan-made Pokemon, and it's interesting. So, no, I haven't played it, but I would like to one day play it, because I'm a huge Pokemon fan.
Yeah, I want to play it, too. I just don't... I kind of don't want to play it on my laptop, because I'd rather take it with me, because it's Pokemon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that seems cool. Is that it for you?
I think so, yeah. I'm pretty sure. No Man's Sky. I haven't played Deus Ex yet.
You haven't?
No, I have it. It's literally installed on my PS4 right now. Okay. But that's going to be the first thing I play pretty much when we're done.
Cool. I was going to ask you about Deus Ex, because I got Deus Ex Mankind Divided. And I started playing it. I didn't get far at all. I got past like the prologue sequence. And like there's a thing that happens in the beginning that I kind of got past. And now I'm in, what's his name? I should know this guy's name. He's the main character of Deus Ex.
Adam Jensen.
Dude with the glasses and Adam Jensen. Thank you.
He didn't.
Yeah,
ask
I don't know how
this.
I forgot that.
He didn't ask.
I beat the whole first game. I don't know how I just forgot his name. But I'm at the part where like you first start off in like his neighborhood, whatever. You leave his apartment, and I kind of tried to do some stuff, and I was like, okay, you know what, I'm good. Not good as in I'm good from the game, but like I'm good for now. Like I'm gonna play something else, because I also got Inside on the same day, which I played and I beat, and I'll get to that in a second. But about Deus Ex, Mankind Divided, I'm sure you'll love if you like the first one. If you have no idea what Deus Ex is, it is stealth, many options. Think first person cyberpunk Metal Gear Solid in a way. Not as good as Metal Gear Solid, but that's kind of what comes to mind when I think about Deus Ex. Also, like, think Dishonored a little bit, without, like, instead of, like, the supernatural powers, you have, like, cyberpunk augmentation powers. The sort of themes that Deus Ex touches on are, like, racism, and that's kind of, like, the main one. The Illuminati's in there for some reason. But yeah, Deus Ex, to me, really cool game, really cool story. I haven't gotten far in Mankind Divided, so I could get halfway and realize that it sucks. But as far as what I know, it's a good game. According to the IGN and GameSpot and all the reviewers, it's amazing. And so check that out if you're interested. But Inside, so I stopped playing Deus Ex because I was like, yeah, I'm kind of not in the mood for this. Started playing Inside, beat Inside. Inside is an amazing game. One of my games of the year. I don't know if it is my game of the year yet, but that game is off the chain.
Inside?
A lot like... Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you don't know what Inside is, it's a lot like Limbo. It's from the developers of Limbo, Playdead, and basically it's a platforming puzzle game. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's called, a puzzle platformer.
Yeah.
And it's very atmospheric. It does really cool things with design and with story, too, even though, like, they're... I don't want to say much about Inside, because it's one of those games where you have to go in blind, where you should go in blind if you're going to play it, because it is very much about, like, the different things that it throws at you, and kind of like the reveals in the story are very important too. But yeah, it's really good, really polished. It was definitely the most polished game I played this year. I haven't played Uncharted 4 yet though, so that could change. It's definitely like the most, as far as story, I think it's probably hit me the hardest. I can't think of another game that's hit me harder in terms of story, and it's definitely like the smartest and most concise and most, like, it's a good package. It's short, which I kind of like, but I kind of dislike, because I really want more of this game, but it doesn't overstay its welcome, which is like a great thing. Like it there's never a point in Inside where I'm like, this game's gone on too long, it's kind of like, I kind of gotta play something else now. It paces itself perfectly, which is, I don't think I can say that about any other game, about its pacing. Like, it paces itself better than most games I've played. Like, it's amazing. And so, yeah, Inside, check it out. Have you played Inside, Ian?
No, but I've seen videos of it, I've seen a bunch of things, I've heard a lot of things about it, so yeah.
Have you played Limbo?
No, but again, I've seen it being played before. I've been in the room when people have been playing it. I've watched Let's Plays. I've done tons of things. So,
Inside is so good. I love it, at least. And so, there's that. I played Deus Ex, played Inside. I already talked about Persona, and that about completes like my gaming. I'm going to PAX next week though, which I'm really excited for. And so, if you're listening and you're going to PAX, hit me up. We'll hang out. We'll play Mario Kart 64 or something. I'll definitely be at a few panels, including Beyond, including IGN's N64 panel, and including Kinda Funny's panel about why the Vita is better than a PC or something like that. And so, yeah, I'll be doing that. Also, on the website, and we'll talk about this more in a later segment, but I also uploaded a mixtape/album/EP. I don't know what I can call it. But it's free, and it's all based on Undertale, and it's all using the Undertale soundtrack. And so, basically, I take the soundtrack and I add drums, and I either speed up or slow up slow down the songs. And so, yeah, that's the thing I did. And so, check that out if you're interested. But for now, let's move on to news.
Oh, come on, wait! You didn't give your mixtape enough credit. This thing is really good. I feel like anyone who's ever listened to Undertale music should go out and listen to it. And if you haven't listened to Undertale, go listen to the original songs, and then go listen to Bless's mixtape, I guess remix album? I don't know what you call it. But yeah, it's really good. If you have some free time, go and listen to it. It will be linked somewhere in the description. Do yourself a favor and check it out.
I give it a solid 6.5 out of 10.
Give it a
That's
6.
That's an IGN.
A solid 6.9 out of 10.
An IGN, I don't know what IGN, I don't know what that is on an IGN scale. I think that's good. Maybe great. Maybe 8 is great. I don't know. But yeah, I spent a good 2 to 3 weeks on it. And so that's not a long time. In if you're like thinking about albums, like albums often take like a year or like months and possibly years. But yeah, this is just a couple weeks of my time just having fun because I like Undertale. Yeah, let me know what you think. If you think it sucks, that's okay, because I think a couple of the songs suck on there. But if you like it, let me know, and let me know the things you like about it so I can do those things more. And if you don't like it, let me know the things that you don't like about it so I can do those things less. Because I definitely want to get better at that stuff, because I really enjoy doing that stuff.
Yeah, that's what I respect about you, Bless. You're always on that grind. You're always doing something different, always doing something new. I respect that.
So are you, though. You do a lot of art, which you could post on OKBeast if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah?
Your art's awesome, yeah. You, like, Thanks. Drew me as Yosuke.
Oh, yeah. That was, like, one of the first things that I... So, for those who don't know, I have a minor in design and product development, and part of doing that stuff is drawing a lot. So, like, when I moved out to Japan, I kind of stopped drawing, which sucks, because you shouldn't stop anything that you're working on, like a talent. But then, for my birthday, mm-hmm. I bought myself a nice drawing tablet, and one of the first pieces I did, I was like, all right, I'm going to put in work for a piece. But it's for anyone who's a creative out there, like, please tell me if this is true for them too. If I'm not doing it for someone or for a certain project, for something, then I don't have motivation. So you and I, when I had got that tablet, I think we were newly friends, and I was like, all right, we're both talking about Persona. I'm going to draw him as a Persona character. So I was like, here we go. So I drew it in pencil, did it digitally. And then even since then, I've been improving every day. So anyone who's working on a skill or an artistic skill, keep grinding, because you will only get better.
Oh, yeah. Do your thing. Like, my mistake is I used to do a lot of spoken word poetry. And I haven't written a poem and I haven't performed. I performed a couple times in December. But besides that, like, since I moved to Seattle, I haven't performed once. And I don't know if I can go back and I can write poetry anymore. I've just spent such a long time not doing it. And also I kind of lost the passion for it after not doing it for a while.
Okay.
And like, it's something that I wish, like, because the thing about like having like different things that you enjoy doing like creatively is that you find other people that like doing those same things, and you become cool with those people. And it's like a very great way of making relationships. And it's a very good, great way of like developing yourself and like your skill set, because like now what I do a lot is dance. And I've danced for like 8-9 years, but I also took a break from that for like a year or two, and I wasn't doing it as hardcore. And it took me a while to like kind of get back into it. I now have like an avenue to. The reason why I'm doing it now is because I live in a city now where I can go out on like probably any weekend and find like a battle that's happening or a competition that's happening.
That's so crazy to me.
Or like a session that's happening, and so I can just go out and it's something that it also like. It boosts your morale. Like I feel like I describe my life to many people as a Step Up movie, specifically Step Up 2. And
okay,
like,
good to know.
That's because like my life is basically Step Up 2 without like the relationship aspect of it. Okay. Which sounds kind of sad, but like I go out and I battle people, and it's fun, and it reminds me of like Yu-Gi-Oh or like Pokemon, of like I go out and I have like this skill set and we battle, and like, there's a winner at the end. And so that's like it's the way that my nerdiness kind of translate into dance. And so, yeah, like even with poetry, like I used to like doing like a lot of slam poetry and facing people. And that all stems from watching Pokemon or watching Yu-Gi-Oh or watching these show, Beyblade, Digimon, watching these like cartoons of like people battling. Dude, I used to love Beyblade so much. Beyblade used to be my jam, but yeah, like.
Why are we starting our Beyblade centric podcast? Beybladers.
Baycast.
Oh God.
Baycast sounds like a podcast about Emma Stone.
Interesting.
Bladecast.
The Bladers.
Pod Blade.
Send in your requests for our Beyblade centric podcast, please.
Yes, send in your names so we can get started. But yeah, like if you have a creative thing you do, continue to develop it, because it makes you and it makes you awesome. And even if you suck at it, because I suck at a lot of stuff, keep doing it. Because I sucked at dance for like 4 years. I still kind of, compared to many other producers, I still suck at producing and continue to do it. Like, I reached out to Grindcraft, who is a music producer who also like does like a lot of video game stuff.
Yeah, and I was like, dude, like, mixes or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and his stuff is amazing. And so like I reached out to him and I was like, I didn't really reach out actually. I saw he posted a thing on Facebook and I commented on it. I was like, dude, like, are you gonna like make like some tutorial videos? His answer was no, but it could have been yes. And if it was yes,
but it could have been,
I could have learned. Yeah, it could have been. And also, like, I'll be meeting Grindcraft at PAX. Hopefully, I almost met him months earlier at a couple times actually. At like I think it was at SakuraCon. And I was at that, and I think he also might have been at Emerald City Comic Con, and I was also at that. I can't remember. But, yeah, news. And so...
Moving on.
News. I still needed a better transition to, like, open up a news part. I should have music, but I'm lazy. And so... yeah, news. My first piece of news, PlayStation Slim. And I apologize, Ian, because I don't have links in here, because I was kind of rushing when I was inputting them into the document.
Mm-hmm. It's okay, but, no worries, I know about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you know about this stuff. So my first piece of news is the PlayStation Slim, which has been leaked. A guy in Europe bought one online on an auction site, got it delivered to his place, yeah, he has it, put up pictures of it, and Eurogamer went to his place, confirmed, turned it on, all that good stuff. Seems like it's real. 98% chance that it's a real PlayStation Slim. And so that's the thing that's happening.
How are you not commenting on like the situation? I love how we do the news and you always say it with a very level-headed, like, all right, and this thing happened and this thing happened, and then I'm like, wait, what? How are we not freaking out about this? Like,
the thing is I freaked out when I first heard about it. So like I freaked out like maybe like last week or whatever. Whenever this thing happened, I was like, I still have strong opinions on it. My opinion is that it doesn't look as good as the Xbox One S. But also like, yeah, it's news. Like, it's a thing that, of course, is going to happen. Like, leaks, PlayStation and leaks go together like Mary and Jane. I don't know. Like, and I mean, all my pieces of news seem to be PlayStation leaks.
Yeah.
I don't know if the PlayStation Now thing was a leak or not. I think it was a leak. But, yeah, like, this is going to be interesting as far as the conference that's going on next month.
It's like September 7th or 17th or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and so it's not even that far. Like, yeah, it's in a few weeks.
So, but wait, yeah, so people who don't know, here's what happened. Mm-hmm. The long and short of it is Sony, maker of PS4 and all that, is coming up with two new systems, the PS Neo and the PS Slim is what it's called, right?
Yeah, and maybe the PlayStation Vita 2.
Ooh.
Those are rumors, though. Those haven't been, like... But, like, it could happen.
So... Anyway, so what happened was, is the PlayStation group or whatever, Sony, they made a prototype, or they're in pre-production now, or they're in actually post-production now.
Of what, Slim?
Of the Slim, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, they produced those things a while ago, it seems like. It seems like they're probably going to do an it's out now kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Or it's out next week. Okay. Because, like, this has a box. Like, when, you know, seriously, like, there's a, it's in the, it was in the box, and so, like, it seems like they're in post-production.
So, long story short, they made this new product. No one, there was no confirmation of it. It was all rumors. And some dude bought it off of essentially eBay, a product that does not exist. Some random dude in Europe bought it off of eBay. Imagine, random listener, if you know nothing about video games and you're listening to this, I don't know how you found this podcast, but I'm trying to help you out here.
Welcome.
Yeah, welcome. So, imagine someone literally goes on eBay and buys the iPhone 7. There are no rumor. There are like barely any rumors about it. There's like this like chatter about it. And then some dude in Europe buys an iPhone 7. Fully functional, fully working, crazy features. This is kind of what the equivalent would be. Like, there's no formal announcement. There's no formal announcement for this product. Like, it's all just rumors in our gaming community that this is going to come out. And the PS Slim, for those who don't know, in theory, is just a dumbed down PS4. And by dumbed down, I mean less bells and whistles, no touchscreen for the on and off. It's a lot smaller, right? And there's actual physical buttons on it instead.
Yeah, and there's no optical port, which most people probably won't care about.
Optical port?
Yeah, on the back. Like, it's basically like a different audio port for if you have, like, maybe speakers or if you want to capture audio or something like that.
Okay. So, essentially, this product is for, if you remember the Xbox 360, there was the regular Xbox 360, then the Slim, then, like, the Pro or whatever. Essentially, PlayStation is is releasing a newer, hopefully cheaper version of the PS4 that people who didn't get into PlayStation early on, an early adopter, someone can get in now for a cheaper price.
Yeah, and it's nothing new, too. It's like they did this with, they do this with like every console. And so like the PS3 and the PS3 Slim, I don't even think the PlayStation 4 is even going to, it might not even be called the PlayStation 4 Slim. It might be called the PlayStation 4 S. I don't know, something else. But we'll see. Like they had the PS3 Slim, they had the small PS2 that I'm looking at right now, actually, because it's in my room. They had a redesign of the Super Nintendo. They had a redesign of the NES. And so it happens all the time. So
DS Lite, if you're familiar, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, the DS Lite. Yeah. I don't know if they had one for the Xbox, the original Xbox. They had one for the 360 though.
Yeah.
Which I don't know the name of it, but yeah, like it's a thing that that happens regularly. And so the PS4 quote unquote Slim is coming out. I don't know if I like how it looks. Like, I saw the picture of it, and I was like, it's cool that it's smaller, which is, like, something you always want to do if you have a redesign. It's, yeah, make it smaller. But it looks, I don't know if I like the look of it. Like, it just doesn't look right. It's rounded. The finish is, like, it has, like, a matte finish,
yeah.
It seems like. And, I don't know, the Xbox One S kind of looks more sexier to me.
Someone described it to me as a nice cookie.
Yeah.
It was a nice ice cream sandwich.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
They should call it the PlayStation ice cream sandwich.
If it was called that, I would buy it. I would sell my I'd sell my PS4 and I'd buy the
Slim. Oh my god! Wait,
called the PS ice cream sandwich.
No, sandwich. It's a G.
Oh, that changes everything.
Of course. What if in the middle, like instead of it being just a flat black, they put like a white ring in the middle so it would look like an Oreo? And there's cross promotion with Oreo, and they came out with Oreos pressed that had the PS4 logo on them. And you got, like, every Oreo pack you bought, you would get, like, a small amount of PlayStation points.
Okay.
All right, we're stopping the podcast. We're going to PlayStation. We're going to... All right, goodbye. What if after I said that, it just goes, like... just, like, it just cuts off, like the stream or whatever. There's, like, white noise after.
And that's just the end of the podcast.
That's the end of the podcast.
We don't upload the rest.
We delete the website. No one sees us again.
There's just like a mysterious new Oreo website that just pops up on the web called called Playstoreo. And
we in there.
And it's like there's like a countdown clock for like a good like 5 days. And everybody's like, what is this? And it seems like it's a PlayStation thing, but it seems like it's an Oreo thing. And it's just 5 days of like, and then it appears on Twitch 3 days into it. And there's like 2 days left on Twitch. And like on the Twitch thing, there's just a man. And, like, it becomes a Twitch plays Pokemon kind of thing, except with the human, where you tell the guy what to do and he does it. And it's, like, he's just in this room with Oreos, filled with Oreos on one side, and on the other side is, like, PlayStations. And everybody's like, what is this PlayStation Oreo doing a thing?
And it's then one weird, guy is like, art man, project man,
I heard that OK Beast podcast the other day. They seem to, like, predict something like this. It seems very specific, actually, what they were talking about seems specifically what's happening in this stream.
I'm glad that you can take this stream of consciousness just as far as I could. I'm glad that we could do this.
Oh yeah, I'm glad to be here with you. My second piece of news is the PlayStation Plus price increase. So it's going from $50 to $60 a year.
Why is this news? Everyone keeps on reporting about this, and this doesn't really feel like news to me.
I mean, it kind of it affects everybody that has a PlayStation.
I mean, at the same time, yeah,
I could use that $10 to get a meal.
It's $10 per year.
I could get 10 more McDoubles a year.
I guess, but...
Yeah, that's 10. That's 2 weeks worth of food that I just lost. Thanks, PlayStation.
But, like, it's literally, it's 83 cents more per month.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not necessarily news to, like, get upset about, I don't think. Like, if you're upset about the... Well, I don't think you just... Don't necessarily be happy about the increase, but, like, also, like... Not. Yeah, don't necessarily like be like, oh, PlayStation's ruining everything. Like it's kind of a thing that seems to just happen. Like Xbox was already at $60, so like, and inflation happens, like things happen. There's a reason why there's a price increase. The only thing we can hope for is that this makes the service better, which I don't really have hope for. But I mean, hopefully.
I mean, I remember in the release they were talking about it, that they were doing it specifically to, like, they mentioned in their press release something about their services, about how they wanted to increase their services. Mm-hmm. And that's the direct reason for why they were doing it. And if you think about it, maybe they've, like, exhausted the amount of games that they've done for PS Plus. And if they increase the money, they're able to get more games in their PS Plus sort of situation. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully. Or hopefully, like, Shuhei Yoshida lets us change our names, which would be the best use of this money.
Guys, it's never happening. Just give up.
It'll happen. I need to change my name from Merc City 64 to something else. Man, should I put my name out there like that? Because if I actually become famous one day, like 5 years from now,
dude, why not?
All of a sudden, like, I blow up and I work for IGN.
What's my name?
Like, people listen back to this one.
Oh, Godlines. There you go. Okay.
And yeah, and people are like, oh man, his username is Merc City 64. And then, like, it's still my username in 5 years because they haven't let us change our names in that time. And so I just get a bunch of friend requests day after day after day. Well, I guess, like, people already do it, I guess, so it's probably not a big deal. Adam Boys has his PSN public, and so...
You want to know, speaking of... I think we might have mentioned this once, but my original Xbox 360 name, I shared it with my younger brother, and the name that we came and agreed on was NJ's Whitest 1313. I was a freshman in high school and he was in middle school, and we could not agree on anything. And then he was like, what about NJ's Whitest 1313? And then we looked at each other and we were like, all right, fine.
I love it.
It was the saddest day when we lost that Xbox Live account.
How'd you lose it? Like, you forgot the password or something? Or
no, it's we, like, got a new system and then it didn't carry over. We couldn't get it back. It was this whole big thing. And it was definitely a sad day in my life when we lost New Jersey's Whitest 1313.
I mean, you could get, like, another New Jersey's Whitest, though. 1314.
It'll never be the right whitest.
It won't be the same. It won't. Yeah, you're right.
I'll never be as you're white right, as I once was.
My last news story is PlayStation Now coming to PC, which also, like, again, like, it's not huge news, but it's really interesting to me.
I think so. I think PlayStation Now coming to PC is huge.
Is it, though? Because PlayStation Now kind of sucks.
Well, I don't even know what games are on PlayStation Now, but just the fact that PlayStation is even, like, trying to get in bed with PC, I feel like is an interesting situation, because the PC is a massively untapped market. Again, for people who don't know, I like, always try to frame my information as if I'm talking to my mom, like someone who doesn't know anything about games, mm-hmm. but I don't know how effective that is. But pretty much, the PC is an untapped market. There's millions and millions of PCs out there, and in theory, they could all play a lot of these older games, and even some newer games. And Microsoft has the in already. Microsoft, Windows, they already have an in to this PC market in the back door sort of way. So the fact that PlayStation Now is becoming available as an app on the PC kind of tells me that Sony is, like, slowly playing with the idea that they might want to do more with the PC, maybe, like, reach out to different groups and try and get more games on PC. Like, imagine there's a day where you can play Uncharted 4 on your PC. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's like a future that might not exist, but imagine there's a scenario where you can play your PC games, or you can play your PlayStation 4 games on a PC. Imagine
that could happen with, like, I mean, with what's happening now, I mean, that could be the case, but that wouldn't be the case for, like, maybe like 10 years, because, like, they probably wouldn't put PS4 games on PS Now until, like, the PS5's out, and two, like, PS Now is so, like, it kind of doesn't work that well. Like, I don't know what it's like to use PS Now if you have amazing internet, but I know how it's like to use PS Now with the internet that I have, with, like, good internet, and it just straight up, like, it's crap. Like, it doesn't work. Like, there's a lag between, like, when you hit a button and when it happens on TV, disconnects all the time. And I mean, maybe it's my American internet. Maybe if I go to, like, Europe or, like, Asia or somewhere where, like, the internet's a lot better, maybe it could work better. But, like, as far as from what I have now, like, it doesn't seem like it's that great of a service. Also, right now, it doesn't have good games. But I guess that's more of a problem with PS Now. It's not really a problem with PS Now coming to PC. Like, if anything, PS Now coming to a PC is a great thing, because more people will have access to PS Now if you don't have a like the PS TV. I don't know if PS Now is on the PS TV, but if you don't have that, if you don't have like the PlayStation TV, or not play Sony TV or whatever the TV is that that you can play PS Now on. If you don't have that, if you don't have like these different things that you could potentially play PS Now on, everybody has a PC, and so there you go. That's the thing you can do.
Yeah.
Ian, what about you? What news do you have?
So what news do I have? Okay, so I have two pieces of news, and one is a big complicated story, so I'm going to try and keep that as brief as possible. But the super easy one to say is Pokemon Go loses 15 million players per day. And again,
is that accurate?
I don't know, but I've seen a lot of, I'm pretty sure, because actually I've seen many places report this, where there's like a heavy user decrease in Pokemon Go. Now, if you don't know anything about the app world, do you know about daily active users?
Yes.
So there's this thing with app, again, if you're listening, you don't know, when it comes to apps and using any program on a phone, there's a thing called a daily active user, which is your app clocks in how much time you use and sends it back to the people who make the app. If you use it a certain, like, I don't know the exact amount of time, but it's like within a certain time limit, you need to use the app to be considered a daily active user. And what they mean is loses 15 million players per day. It means it's losing daily active users. Mm-hmm. So maybe some people are using it like once every 2 days, once every 3 days. And if you think about it, that makes sense, because the more Pokemon you catch, in theory, if you're only there to complete the Pokedex, the more Pokemon you catch, in theory, you should be playing less.
Interesting. My interpretation of the article is like they've lost 15 million since July, which is still like a very, very large number. But like even with like the daily active users thing, I think I'm not surprised, because I have Pokemon Go and I haven't touched it since like a few weeks ago. And that's partly because like the game kind of screwed me. Like all of a sudden all my Pokeballs disappeared and my inventory is full. And I'm like, how did this happen? I'm not playing this game anymore. But also, I just kind of lost. Like, I stopped playing for a couple days, and then I just stopped playing forever. Like, I got to the point where it was like, what's the point in doing this? And I feel like a lot of people kind of reached that point to where it's like, yeah, I don't feel like playing anymore. I still see people on the bus playing it every now and then, but it's not as frequent. Like, I think a lot of people have just lost interest in the game. And either, like, they're, like you said, like, they've reached a point to where they don't have to be on as much, or I feel like they reached the point to where they're just not on at all because they kind of lost it. Like, they didn't get that far, and they don't feel like going all the way, and so they're kind of just done with it. I think those are the two possibilities. I think that's both of those are contributing to why people aren't logging in as much and as long.
Yeah. I mean, again, I just saw that, and Pokemon Go is still pretty popular out here in Japan. I see a bunch of people using it all the time. Then again, the mobile gaming market out here is completely different than it is in the US. So maybe that's a part of it. I don't know. But I just wanted to see what your thoughts were, because I remember back when it first came out, you guys being you and Alex and all them, like, were really, really, really into it. So I was curious to see what your hot take on
it. It's funny because, like, me as somebody who's really, really into it, and also, like, many people I saw around town at work, all the stuff that were really, really into it, I don't hear them talking about it anymore. Like, it's become one of those things in 2016 to where, like, it's hot 1 week, or in this case, maybe like even a whole month and a half. Like, it was super hot and like killing it, but it doesn't have that staying power. Like, the thing about Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat is that, like, I think there's a continual usage there, and there's new content every day for you to interact with, and there's new stuff. Even Vine, like, there's new stuff to look at every day, there's new stuff to experience, there's new ways to interact with people. It becomes a part of your daily experience. With Pokemon Go, there's not stuff to keep you in as long and as consistently. Like, in Pokemon Go, if you get tired of catching Pokemon, you're just tired of catching Pokemon, and you're not going back in. If you're not tired of catching Pokemon, if you're all the way in, you get to a point to where you kind of have like a thing going, or like a certain like routine, to where like you reach this part of your day, you're on the bus, okay, I'm gonna play Pokemon for this 30 minutes where I'm on this bus, okay, I'm done, and I'm not gonna touch it. I think it's become ingrained, and also, like, I don't know, kind of forgotten in a way. Like either it's part of your routine or you're kind of done with it, I think. And so, yeah, like, I'm not too surprised. 15 million players, though, is a lot. And, like, when I first read it, when I saw, like, per day, I was like, is that even possible? Because, like, that's a lot of people. But, like, with the amount of people that are playing Pokemon Go to begin with, like, the fact that they have that many players to lose is impressive and really crazy when you think about it. So, yeah, those are my thoughts on it.
There you go. So, and then the second thought is, again, I know I'm the only esports guy, so this might not be relevant to everybody. So I'm just going to make it short and sweet. There is a game called League of Legends, very popular in Korea and also in America. And it is slowly but surely becoming this like massive phenomenon where it's becoming like an esport, like this thing that is, there's studios, there's tournaments, there's world tournaments, it's a big thing. So pretty much what happened was is the company's owner, Riot, I forget his exact name, but he goes by the handle Tryndamere. He was quoted referencing a video of a owner of a team, a very popular team in America called TSM. And they got into this like Twitter beef, but like an adult version of Twitter beef. Like you could see that people were like lawyers were going over their tweets to make sure it wasn't too bad. And essentially what it ended up being was this like long form conversation about sustainability in the market and what market could sustain esports. So even though this is news, and yet at the same time, this is more of just an open-ended question I wanted to ask you. Because, again, you're not in the League of Legends scene, and I don't know if many people that listen to us are. If you want to hear about it, go on reddit.com/League of Legends, and it's Mark Merrill's comments to Reginald, if you're curious about that. But what I want to ask you, and maybe the people that are listening as well, is what are your thoughts on the sustainability of esports in the long term?
I think esports is here to stay. Like, I don't think esports is going to go away until, like, video games go away. If that's a thing that ever happens. I think esports is, like, the natural evolution of where video games are supposed to go. And, like, it's not necessarily even a new thing. Like, Counter-Strike has been a thing forever. I remember, like, being a lot younger and, like, seeing, like, I forgot what it was. It might have been, like, MLG or whatever. But, like, seeing, like, tournaments. And it was actually on TV, it was Counter-Strike, FIFA, these different games are being played in a tournament-like fashion, like a very like professional kind of fashion. And, I mean, League and Dota and these relatively, like, new games that have come up are sort of, like, the evolution of that. And they're sort of what they're pushing it forward. I don't know enough about League to say whether it can sustain esports, but I think I know enough about games to know that like esports is a thing that's here to stay, and that's because people like competition, people like regular sports, and people like that because it's entertaining, and people like supporting somebody, or people like supporting a team, people like rooting people on, and it's a thing that is very natural with games. It's a thing that it goes naturally with games, and so like I'm getting Street Fighter 5, right? I've ordered it. It's getting delivered next week. The reason why I'm getting Street Fighter 5 is because I enjoy competition. I enjoy fighting people. I enjoy the competitive aspect of it. As long as there's people that enjoy the competitive aspect of these things, esports is going to be a thing. Like, therefore, to me, I think esports is here to stay. At least as long as video games are here to stay. I don't see any reason for it to go away or it to dip in popularity. Now it might dip in popularity as like the more popular ones dip in popularity. So like LOL all of a sudden like disappears. Like of course like the numbers in which esports or people are engaging with esports are going to dip. But I think something will definitely take the place of LOL. If not immediately, then eventually. Like it's esports is definitely like a thing that's not it's dominated right now by LOL and like Dota LOL or whatever. Dota, yeah. But it's the not MOBA like genre. Those aren't like the end all be all.
Street Fighter's on the rise actually.
Yeah. And in like 20 years, like LOL might still be a thing, Dota might still be a thing, but they might not be. And if they're not, and even if they are, there's still gonna be other ones there. And a bunch of developers right now are trying to capitalize off the esports fad or whatever. I don't even want to call it a fad. The esports concept, rise in popularity lately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, many developers are trying to capitalize off of that right now. And you're seeing many not be successful, but you're seeing many also be successful. And, like, Overwatch is a game that's overly popular. And, of course, it's going to have, like, a place in the esports scene. Like, it might not be as hardcore, but if it gains an audience, it gains an audience. And people will support Overwatch in the esports sort of scene. And so, I don't know. I'm interested to see the future of esports, but I also don't think it's a thing that can be dictated by specific games. And I don't think it's a thing that's going to go away.
All right, cool. Thanks, Bless. Anyone out there, if you have an opinion about this, if you think about the sustainability of esports, let us know. Tweet at us. I'm curious to see what people think, because
if you play an esport and if you want me to get into an esport, let me know what esports are cool and I'll try them out, because I want to get into that kind of thing, because I feel like I'm going to be good. I feel like there's something out there that I'm good at. And if I can find that thing, I'm going to be rich.
I agree. I think we need to. That's the new series idea, is get Bless rich.
Get me good at Street Fighter.
You got to talk to Chase about that one. But again, I'm just curious to see what people think about it, because I've had conversations with people about, like, sustainability in the business market for esports and what it means. And, you know, it's such a young it's such a young market. And there's essentially what this post is about the company that owns League of Legends has this kind of, like, iron grasp over it, and it's not allowing teams to come in and have a sustainable market economy. So they have to invest in other places. So it's this whole big drama about it. That's kind of where the drama sparked. So I'm curious to see what people think about it. Maybe if there's someone out there who's good with business or something like that, let me know. I want to see what they think.
So. I wish I knew more about it, though, because I feel like it could be very analogous to actual sports. Like,
it is. There's actually, in the story, they're talking about putting a proposal out there to have franchising, to franchise teams out, like a minor league and a major league and everything.
I was going to say, is the issue in this article, like, is LOL is too big, and that's kind of like might kind of kill esports a bit, or what?
It's the whole thing is, we'll get into it another time, but the long and short of it is that the company that owns League of Legends is not allowing other tournaments to occur. And essentially, they want to rule the whole scene with an iron fist. So,
gotcha.
That's kind of their whole shtick, and it's not allowing growth.
So it's
kind of
like, I don't know what I can compare it to, but okay, I think I see.
But that could be an entire podcast in itself. It could be just talking about esports and sustainability and all that sort of stuff.
Awesome. So we'll go into our next segment. That's your last news story, right?
I think so. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Our next segment usually would be guest talk, which was where we would talk with a guest and kind of like see what the topic is and all that stuff, all that jazz. We don't have a guest this week since, we don't have a guest this week since Ian is back and wanted to get a one-on-one so we can kind of like, you know, recoup and kind of have us time, you know?
Yeah. You know, we haven't had Ian Bless time in a while. It's been a minute. So we needed some solo time to get back into the groove.
Yeah. Need that good old Ian Bless time. Portion.
What did someone say the other day? You sent me a text where it was like, yo, who's that other guy in your podcast? Ian? He's like your Colin, right? Like,
yeah, please explain that story. He was like, this dude I'm friends with was trying to get me like to do a stream with him or something. Which I don't even know if I'm still doing that. But like he was like, oh man, can you ask Ian if he wants to be on it too? Like, he kind of reminds me of your Colin, and like referring to like Colin Moriarty from Kind of Funny, to which I thought was hilarious. I said that to you. I was like, dude, that is awesome. Like, because I wouldn't have thought that, but maybe I could see it. Like, it was funny to me.
Yeah, and when you sent that text to me, I started laughing, because again, for anyone who doesn't know, I'm originally from the Northeast near New Jersey, and I probably live like an hour or two from where Colin lives. We have a lot. We agree on a lot of things, and that's. Colin is actually one of the reasons why I kind of like got into Kind of Funny, because of his like political views and because of all the things he talks about. So like when someone compares me to Colin Moriarty, I was like, all right, okay, this is kind of what I was into. I'm into it. So
I found it funny because
it was good.
It makes me Greg Miller, which is hilarious, because I'm very much like not Greg Miller in terms of personality, but I love Greg Miller. Like, he's like my favorite dude in the industry. And it's because of his energy, that's because of like his heart, and that's because of like the way he describes the things he loves. I really like that about him. And so like I do try to emulate him in the ways that I feel like are appropriate to emulate him. But like I could never ever like do that. And also the idea of me having a Colin is I love it. But yeah, that's the thing that happened. So yeah, no guest talk this week. As far as our next segment, which is last week on the site, we had some things happening. And so first thing we had posted last week, as of the time you're hearing this, as of the time I'm talking right now, it's more like this week. But earlier, first thing is we had an article about Assassin's Creed that was written by the homie John Seminario. I think that's how I say his name.
You gotta say it with like a really fake Italian accent, like Seminario.
You know? I'm not gonna do that because you can say that. Right. I can't say
that. I already said it. We're good.
Because I'm white, or because I'm black.
You're white. That's the hot take right there. Oh no, not again, not again.
Oh no, don't call me Oreo. First to worst, looking back on the Assassin's Creed games by John Seminario. Like, you can find that on OKBeast, and that's a community post. And so if you're part of the OKBeast community, or if you just want to write, you don't even have to be part of the community. You can hate us, and you can still write for us. Just send it to my email, blessing@aoa.com. Twitter me if you're interested. If you don't feel like writing all that down, and I'll send you the email. And that's how you get a post on our website. And if you do that, that also gets me out of writing an article, because I count that as one of my posts of the week. Because I'm lazy and I'm looking for any excuse to not write that week. After that, a couple days later, or maybe the next day actually, Throne Watch, episode 1. Throne Watch is a new podcast we have here at OKBeast in collaboration with the homie Himanshu Talwar. I hope I said that right.
Talwar?
Manju's Towel War.
You know it. That's the homie.
Oh, the towel cost. Throne Watch is a podcast about music. And so if you like music, specifically hip-hop, but not even just hip-hop, a lot of music in general, hip-hop-inspired music or hip-hop-influenced music, R&B, pop, whatever. If you like music and you like hearing me talk about music and you like hearing Himanshu talk about music, check out Throne Watch. I think the first episode was awesome. And so, and if you like Chance the Rapper, that's what the first episode was on. Basically, every episode we talk about a different artist. And so this last week was Chance the Rapper. Next week will be Anderson .Paak. And it is a bi-weekly podcast, meaning that it will post every 2 weeks. And so definitely check that out. Yeah, I would do it every week, but your boy is lazy. And I got other things to do. And so, yeah, check that out. Lastly, what posted on Thursday night, whatever you want to call it, was Hopes and Dreams, a fan-made Undertale experience by yours truly. So yeah, that's the Undertale project I did. Definitely check it out, also on OKBeast.com. So yeah, it was a pretty busy week on OKBeast, and so definitely check that out. Soon enough, Ian will have another article, since he's back from vacation.
Vacay.
Yeah, and I also want to do, there are a couple articles I want to do. I don't know when I'm going to get to do them, but I really want to do them soon. One is about Persona 4 and about how Persona 4 kind of helped me with like some like, I don't know what to call it, because I don't want to call anything that's like too extreme or anything, but like mental health a little bit, like
introspection. Not like depressed, it allowed you to think more introspectively about yourself.
Yeah. It helped me with myself a little bit, specifically a quote from Yukiko in the game where she's basically saying, I don't know the exact quote, but she's kind of saying that people have different personalities, you know, and there doesn't just have to be like one version of yourself. There could be different aspects to you. And that kind of helped me with some stuff. And also, yeah, like, there's a lot of things in Persona that kind of helped me.
Like how games and art can be the mirror to yourself. It can be like a nice mirror to reflect how you're feeling in a certain situation or how you're feeling in general.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of ironic in a way. Persona 4 kind of revealed to me some things about myself that I kind of didn't realize, which is kind of cool, because that's kind of all of what the game's about, is people kind of coming to realizations about themselves and coming to terms with them. But yeah, the game kind of did that for me, and so definitely I'll write something about that soon. And also I want to write maybe not in a review, but something about Inside. We'll see. And I also do want to do some video content, but I'm not going to make a bunch of empty promises. But stay tuned to the website, and definitely keep an eye out, because some things are about to happen. As far as our next segment, how long have we been going? We've been going for like an hour, and so we're gonna run through this. But our next segment is Ian's top 10 games of all time, which is the thing we've been doing for the last few episodes.
Cool.
But I want to get yours.
Sure. So again, I even wrote this like with a little asterisk on it. So I said, quote, not best games of all time, but games that emotionally resonated with me and my life. So again, I have a shitty memory. I'm not that great with that sort of stuff. So when you say all time, I'm sure I've played games, and I'm sure that after I even wrote this list, I thought, wait, crap, I forgot about this game and this game and this game. So these games are just games that that really resonated with me at the time, and possibly resonated with me at a moment of time in my life. So keep that in mind when I'm saying this list. If you don't agree, let me know. I'm curious. So number one, I wrote Pokemon Crystal / Pokemon Y.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want me to just go through all the games and then you'll comment as we go, or?
I mean, you can give like a small synopsis.
Okay, cool. So anyone who listens to this podcast knows that I love Pokemon. It was one of my first like introductions into Japanese culture, Japanese anime. And then the game I just fell in love with. I played it all the time, Pokemon Red. I played every single Pokemon mainline game since it came out. For whatever reason, it just always connected with me. I've always liked the games. I've loved the monsters. I've loved the designs. And yeah, this is a good time. Not really much to say. Pokemon Crystal and Pokemon Gold were like my first games that I like knew. I was like, all right, this is a thing that I like now. It wasn't just like, oh, Pokemon is whatever. Pokemon's whatever. It was like, nope, this is a thing. I like this thing. Pokemon is my thing.
So
now.
Pokemon Crystal, I understand definitely. What makes you pick Y over the other ones?
So Pokemon, okay, so I could tell you literally like a manifesto of why each Pokemon game is good. Like, mm-hmm. I think if you're looking for a good story, I think Pokemon Black and White 2 are really good. Pokemon Black and Pokemon Black and White 2 are really good. I think Pokemon Red and Blue are good if you're into nostalgia. Pokemon Crystal is an amazing sequel that has a lot of replay value because it gives you two regions to fight in, two whole gyms or two leagues to fight in. Tons of Pokemon, mm-hmm. interesting areas. But the reason Pokemon Y I like so much is because they made the graphical jump, the graphical increase that made it more interesting for me. Because for most people, or for almost everybody, there's franchise fatigue. You play the same game over and over again, and then you start to get bored with it. But with Pokemon Y, there was such a graphical jump between Pokemon Black and White 2, or whatever I think the most recent game was, I'm pretty sure it was Black and White 2, to Pokemon Y, that it just mm-hmm. reinvigorated me. And I was like really excited to see these new models, this new area. And yeah, it just got me excited for Pokemon again.
So, yeah, nice.
That's why. And if anyone who hasn't played Pokemon Y, please play Pokemon Y. It's a great, great title. So next one is, number two is Super Mario World. And believe it or not, there's a story behind this. Believe it or not, people, there was a time where I didn't play any video games at all.
Mm-hmm. I think you might have told the story, actually.
I might have. I have mentioned Carly before, but there was a time where I didn't play any games at all. And I met my neighbor. We've known each other for a long time at this point. But she invited me over to her house, and we would just play Super Mario World all the time because her brothers owned a video game system, a Super NES, right? SNES, that's where I was on.
Mm-hmm.
So this girl introduced me to this world that I had no idea. And I knew nothing about it. So like when I think of like games that really made an impact on me, I think Pokemon Crystal because of that defined me as a person in terms of like what that was like the first thing I actually remember liking. Like, this is something I enjoy. This is my passion. And Super Mario World was like this, the opening of the door into this world that I had no idea even existed. And I have that girl Carly to thank. So shout outs to Carly. Number three, Mass Effect 2 was one of the first times that I like cared about game stories. And I distinctively remember like caring about the characters and collecting them for this mission, and what does this mean for the mission, and you know, the gameplay was great. And I remember talking about it with my friends and like, oh, this was an important thing in my college career. Playing this game, staying up for hours on end playing it. Like, it was just a great game overall, and that game made me want to play more games with good stories. So,
cool.
Yeah, so moving on. Battlefield Bad Company 2. It was a great multiplayer game and a great gameplay loop. And pretty much, if you're seeing a pattern in this, is that every game that I'm listing is, like, making me realize that this singular part of video games is important. So, like, Pokemon Crystal is about, like, you know, fandom and passion for a game is important. Super Mario World is about, like, the hero's journey, like, beginning, like, the beginning of my journey in video games. Mass Effect 2 is about how story and plot is important. And then Battlefield Bad Company 2 is about how multiplayer and good multiplayer mechanics working together in unison is also a very important part of video games in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I also, there's a story about how I would play Medic, and the Medic has like these paddles that you can revive people with if they die. And whenever we would play with my friends, I would always yell, "Don't you die on me," whenever I'd revive somebody. So just imagine playing a game with me for like an hour, like, "Don't you die on me? Don't you die on me?" Like this fake dramatic scenario. And it always makes me laugh. So
I never played Bad Company 2, but I remember commercials for it, and it looked awesome.
I didn't play it until a friend suggested it, and then all four of my boys, we played together, and we call ourselves the Banditos. So we would just like run around like, "Yes, we are the Banditos," and like we would play like fake mariachi music after we would win a game. And it was just like a fun like moment like with my friends and I, and about how those like those great experiences you can have in a group if you're playing a game together. So next one is Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. And this was, like, again, I realized how important RPGs were, and it made me realize that I am a huge RPG fan. So this was the game that, like it just clicked for me. I was like, wait, I love this genre. This is my favorite genre. I love RPGs. And if you haven't played that game, go and play it. Good job system, good story, good mechanics, good everything. I completely recommend it. So number six is Persona. But I even say next to it, I said may remove it. Because we were talking about it before, but there's this whole big thing of controversy between the two of us where we say about the ending. And I still think Persona 4 is a monumental experience and it's an amazing experience. But that ending really just like kicked me in the dick. And I have like, don't feel good about it afterwards. But maybe if I replay it, I'll feel a bit differently. But regardless,
for the record, this is like the not true ending. This
We're talking about the neutral slash not true ending. But still, like, thinking back on it, I had a great experience. You know, makes you feel for the characters, makes you emotional for the characters, and it had really great music. Like, even now, like, I'm playing the music in my head. Like,
That music is amazing. And we'll get to that later, actually, too. But, like, that music, that every time I get into a battle, like, it's very hard for me not to not play that game with, like, because usually when I play games, I'm usually listening to podcasts, I'm listening to my own music. Especially if I have the opportunity to, like, if it's not that story heavy. So for Persona 4, when I first started playing Persona 4, I would play, like, the story bits with my headphones and my Vita. And then once I got to the dungeon, I put my headphones in my iPod. But, like, the last, like, 70 hours, or not 70 hours, the last, like, 50 hours I played of the game, like, I played with my headphones in my Vita, even in the dungeon parts, because that music is so good. And it's so, like, you know when you have like nostalgia about games and you have like the nostalgia feeling towards music in the game, like I know I'm gonna get that later on when it comes to Persona 4. Like if four years from now I hear a song from Persona 4, I'm gonna get like really excited because the music is really good and it's and you hear it so much because you've put so many hours into the game and it doesn't get tiring that like I can only imagine like the feeling I'd get of hearing those songs after not hearing them for a while. Music is so good.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's like an amazing time. And I'm pretty much exactly what you said is that like when I usually put on podcasts, I'm a big perpetrator of that is that I'll play a game, but I won't be 100% in it. I'll kind of be playing music or I'll be playing something else or this or that or whatever. So but with that game, I could not listen to the music. It was such a integral part of what I was doing. And like, it was such a, it was just an important part of the game in general. So,
yeah.
So the next game, where's my list? So the next game is Borderlands 1 and 2. And I'm lumping those together just because of the Borderlands series. And the thing that's important for those games is, for me at least, again, like a college experience where like a group of us were, we found this game completely randomly. It had already been old at this point because I think it came out in 2009 and we were playing it like early 2010. But like, I distinctively remember we found this game during finals week and I had a math final the next day and I stayed up for like 12 hours and played the game and I went to my math final on no sleep. And it's just one of those moments where I was like, wow, gaming is important to me. This is a fun game. It doesn't take itself seriously. And it was just a fun experience. Like, it was just a good time. And that's kind of like what I take away from it. Like, the world isn't anything crazy. It's a fun, goofy world. And especially in 2009, 2010, every game was like, oh, yeah, shoot everything. Yeah, serious, dark. And, like, this game was, like, just more fun. It was just a different experience. And that's kind of, like, what I am into. I'm into a different and novel experience, not necessarily, have you like, played, this super serious thing.
Have you played Tales from the Borderlands?
Yeah.
But I feel like I might have already talked to you about this, but how did you feel about it?
Amazing. I loved it.
Yeah, I love that, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Borderlands 2 is awesome. Borderlands 1 is also awesome. Yeah. Like, I played both of those. I didn't get far in 1. I started playing 2 again because I didn't get that far in 2 either. And, like, it's really addicting.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the most addicting games I've played. Like, it's something that keeps coming back. You know, and I kind of broke free from it. But when I go back, I can't wait to get back into it. Because, like, the loop of, like, getting new guns and shooting and getting rewarded and shooting more and getting rewarded and getting more powerful and kind of trying to find more powerful guns so you can, like, just demolish people. Borderlands 2 is amazing. Yeah. Borderlands in general is amazing.
Yeah, it's just a good time. And again, that lack of serious tone really got me into it as well. So number 8 is one that you and I both share, and it's Donkey Kong 64 / Kirby 64.
Donkey Kong 64, the greatest game. Now, I won't say the greatest game, but man, I love Donkey Kong 64 with a passion. I love it more every time it's brought up. And you added in Kirby 64 with this one, which has me curious because I played Kirby 64.
So Kirby 64 isn't like this amazing monumental game. But again, that's why I put this asterisk at the top of my list saying not the best games of all time, just games that have emotional resonance with me. And I remember, again, my memory is really bad. So whenever I remember something, I'm like super happy about it. And Kirby 64, I distinctively remember, like, this was after I met Carly. So we were both into video games and I had a Nintendo 64. And I go to my dad and my mom and I'm like, Mom, can I have Kirby 64? I want to play Kirby. And my mom's like, no. I go to my dad and he's like, no, I just bought you a game. No. And my parents don't like video games at all. They don't understand what it is. I showed my mom a Vita last week or 2 weeks ago. And she was like, what's this? This is so interesting. But like, they're not big tech people. They're not big video game people. But my grandpa always supported me no matter what, even if he didn't understand what it was. And he was actually extremely interested in the 64. So I run to my grandpa. I'm like, grandpa, I want to play a video game. And then he's like, all right, let's get it. So we hop in the car after my dad, like, or my grandpa, like, berates my dad. And he's like, why don't you just get your son the video game? What's wrong with you? You got to support his ideas. You got to support his creativity. So we jump in the car. We run to Toys R Us. We grab 64, Kirby 64. And I just sit there and I play it. And my grandpa just sits there and watches. And like, he doesn't say anything. He doesn't ruin the vibe or anything. He's just sitting there just enjoying the game. And like, that for me is like what video games are all about. It's about enjoyment and just sharing that enjoyment with somebody else. So my grandpa doesn't give a fuck about Kirby, but the fact that he was able to enjoy me enjoying something and realize that was important to me, that game will always stick out in my mind as like an important game for me, because that made me realize like, oh, my family doesn't understand my hobby, but this one person does. And like, how important knowing that one person can be in your life, you know? Like, for us, we bond over Kind of Funny because there's a community of people that can be that one person that understands your hobby and your passion and what you're into and respects that, as opposed to ridicules you for it, you know? And that's why I think Kirby 64 is important to me.
I feel you.
Yeah.
I feel you.
So number 9 is Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. So
interesting.
Yeah. So people are going to crucify me for this, but I've never been a huge Zelda fan, but again, the 64 era, I'm a huge fan of Majora's Mask purely for the design element. And this was, again, one of those like like snap wake up moments in my life where I realized that this thing that I was ignoring is very important. And it's when I realized that interesting game design and like just design of characters and scenarios and items, I realized that's when I was like, wait, this is important. This is an interesting thing that I enjoyed. Because I didn't even complete that game to its like to its end, but I remember specifically putting on different masks and like watching the animation and seeing myself transform, and I was like, wow, that's so interesting, that's so cool, that's so amazing, why is it cool, like how did they do that? And it just got the cogs turning in my brain of like, wow, like why is it like this and how do they design this? And that's again important for me, maybe not the best game of all time, but it just resonates in my life essentially.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back and play it because I went back and I played Ocarina of Time a few years ago for the first time. Mm-hmm. And just to like, experience it, to see, because this Ocarina of Time is a game that many people actually hold as the best game of all time. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to know what it was about that game that made people feel that way. Mm-hmm. And I played it and I liked it and all that stuff. And it made me like Zelda. And that made me play Twilight Princess, which I actually really loved. And actually that's a game that I really, really liked, and it's one of my favorite games. But Majora's Mask is a game that whenever I hear people talk about it, especially like game journalists and people that really like Majora's Mask, the way they describe it is really fascinating to me because they talk about the clockwork system. They talk about this new element to game design that it kind of introduced in the time stuff in there, and how like you can follow somebody to like kind of see like how their day goes, so you can kind of like plan things out. And yeah, like it sounds like a really cool, really, really cool idea and a really, really cool game. And I really like the darkness of it. And I played a little bit of it. I played maybe like three to four hours of it, and I stopped playing it because it kind of confused me. But I do want to get back to it, because I kind of want to experience that game the way it's supposed to be experienced, which is kind of like it was supposed to be experienced in the late 90s, but I want to experience it to the fullest.
Yeah, it's definitely a good time. I would definitely suggest it to anybody who wants it.
I should get a DS. I should get a 3DS and play the remaster. That'd probably be the best way.
I think you should. Just saying.
Yeah, send me a 3DS. If you're listening to this podcast, my address is... No, I'm just kidding. But you should contact me if you want to send me a 3DS, because I'll play that game.
So gonna send me a 3DS. Anyway, my final game is, I think, I don't know if it was on your list as well, but my final game is Undertale.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't on my list, but I'm thinking about adding it to not my top 10 games list, but definitely like my top 20 or 30. I'm thinking about adding it because it's definitely a game I want to play it again just to make sure. But I really like it.
So the reason why it's on my top 10 is, again, it resonated with me emotionally. It was an internet phenomenon. It was amazing music, good story, interesting. And I caught Undertale before it started to circulate on, like, big YouTubers and, like, on Reddit and stuff. So I kind of caught it early. So I played it, and then I slowly started to see other people play it. And I kind of got this joy of, like, wow, like, this experience that I had is similar to this person's experience. And it became this thing where it was just an interesting thing, and it was a nice thing to share with like an internet community. And that was kind of like the early phases of me going on the internet and seeing someone share their experience with a video game. And that's kind of where we are now. Even with this podcast, I'm sharing my experiences with video games, but Undertale is my proto experience with that. So that's why it's on the top 10 list of all time for me.
Nice. Good list. I like it. It's interesting to me. Yeah. Like, I've never seen Battlefield Bad Company 2 on anybody's list. Mm-hmm. And so that wouldn't really intrigue me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a solid list. I like it.
Five of these are RPGs. So.
Oh yeah. RPGs can easily make any list, because RPGs are they're so dense.
Yeah.
And they're so, it's easy to get lost in them and spend a lot of time with them. And so I don't know how many RPGs are on my list. But that's probably because I didn't start playing RPGs until probably later in my life. And so,
okay,
there's that. But since you just talked about your top 10 games, topic of the week, let's talk about video game music and what we think are the most memorable game soundtracks and our favorites. And I brought this topic up, mostly because of the Undertale thing I did. And because I thought it'd be interesting to see and talk about. We don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but we'll talk about it for a little bit. As far as my favorite soundtracks, I have some written down. One of them is Undertale, and that's the reason why I did the remix thing. And I won't go further into that, because if you really want to know why I like Undertale, the soundtrack, then listen to the soundtrack. It encompasses old school very well, but at the same time keeps like it doesn't limit itself to like old school limits, I guess is a weird way to describe it, but it does emulate old school very well. And I say old school is in like 8-bit, 16-bit, that kind of thing. Persona 4, I really like the soundtrack, and that's just because like they did a great job using like an original pop vocal, these original songs that just fit in with every. At first when I started playing Persona 4, it was kind of like jarring to me, because I was like, oh wow, they're like, there's an actual person singing like a song. Then I remembered it was a PS2 game, and so I was like, oh, you know what, it makes sense for a PS2 game, because yeah. PS2 games did that.
Yeah.
But playing it on my Vita and playing it with like HD, I want to say HD graphics, but the graphics aren't really HD, like the menus are HD and stuff, and it pops out and it's very colorful. And the combination of that with the music being all upbeat and very out there and very like, I don't know, it's different. It wasn't what I was expecting. And 70 hours into the game, you grow to love it, and you grow to like, you grow to enjoy it in a way that I feel like you don't enjoy many other game soundtracks. Like many other game soundtracks are amazing and they're great. But this soundtrack in particular does something so different and so like weird, since it's the genre it is and since it's the kind of game it is, that it's really cool and it's really enjoyable. And so that Persona 4, like, and those, that's funny because Undertale and Persona 4 are two games that I played this year, for the first time, and they still had that impact on me. Usually it would take a while for me to realize like these games are great, but these are games that I played recently that had that impact on me. Burnout 3, that soundtrack is amazing to me. I still go back and listen to that soundtrack on YouTube. I'm a person that's not that into rock music, but Burnout 3 soundtrack did it for me. And not only did it like go well with the game, but the songs individually themselves, like I really liked. I just thought like it was that game had a very good selection of licensed songs that it used. Shadow Colossus, of course, the soundtrack's amazing. It's very contextual, and so like when you're climbing the soundtrack from when you're like approaching a colossus is different from when you're climbing a colossus is different from like the intense parts of the game to the calm parts of the game, and those songs are beautiful. I also have like a remix to a Shadow Colossus song that I did, and so you can check that out on YouTube if you feel like. GTA San Andreas, particularly Radio Los Santos, which is the hip-hop station in GTA San Andreas, very great music selection of old school hip-hop. And it introduced me to a lot of rappers that I wasn't familiar with, made me a fan of Eazy-E, and it set the tone of that game brilliantly, since that's a game that takes place in the 90s, and it takes place in Compton, and takes place during gang wars, and you're playing as a gangster and all this stuff. And Radio Los Santos sort of brought all that stuff together, and it made that game feel, it put like the cherry on top of that game of like, I'm shooting these dudes and I'm stealing these cars, and Eazy-E's playing in the background talking about how he's shooting dudes and stealing cars. And it also introduced me to Ice Cube's Today Was a Good Day. Awesome song, amazing song, like really great song. Also, the country station on GTA San Andreas is also really good. So, yeah, if you like country, I recommend it. It had songs like Mama, Don't Let Your Baby Grow Up to Be a Cowboy, which I still listen to sometimes. And, like, a lot of the radio stations that in that game are awesome, but particularly the country station and the hip-hop station are the two that, like, really, like, were my jam. And so, yeah, that's it for me. Ian?
For all of my music?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I didn't realize it. You went through your list so quick.
Yeah.
So, with video game music for me, my two bigger ones are two games that actually introduced me to music, kind of similar to you with GTA San Andreas, and it was Tony Hawk Underground and Rock Band.
Ooh, that's a good one. I didn't play Underground, but Underground 2 and Tony Hawk 3.
Yeah. Underground
introduced a lot of music.
Yeah, Underground and Rock Band specifically introduced me to genres that I normally wouldn't listen to. So I listened to like a lot of the Eagles and like more like rock music from both Underground and Rock Band. Because in my town, hip hop was popular, so I only really listened to hip hop. So I knew about Eazy, mm-hmm. I knew about, you know, all these other things that you were talking about in GTA. But when it came to like rock music, I didn't know any of it. So those two games specifically really introduced me to that sort of style that I didn't even understand was good until after the fact. And then the other three I have are Persona, Pokemon Red, and Undertale. Again, just very good music, solid, very memorable, and that's kind of why I put them here. And the reason why they're memorable mm-hmm. is because they just work with their games fluidly. And that's about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Pokemon was one that I forgot to put on my list, and it should be on my list because that soundtrack is also amazing, and it's just very memorable, particularly like I don't know if I can objectively say that was like an amazing soundtrack. I mean it is an amazing soundtrack. It's a great soundtrack. I don't know if it's amazing to me because I remember it so vividly because I play that game all the time and it was one of my favorite games growing up, or if it's because like I don't know if I played that game for the first time today if the soundtrack would still be as great. But that soundtrack, it does like it has stuck with me more than other soundtracks for some reason, and I'm sure there's like a very strong reason for that, and that's because it's a great soundtrack. Let's get into questions and we'll wrap up. We have two questions. First question is from Chase Williams at Bodacious Chase on Twitter. He asks, do you think we've seen all the possible video game genres already? Which is an interesting question. I think no, definitely no, because there are genres that have recently come to fruition that we've seen. The MOBA is one that is fairly new.
But MOBA is a subgenre of an already existing genre.
I mean, that is true. That is very true. But like
real-time action strategy game, that like StarCraft and all that sort of stuff. MOBAs evolved from a Warcraft 3 mod, and that is what mm-hmm. made Dota, and then Dota sparked League of Legends.
That's a good point. But MOBA though, like MOBAs have like their own specific like things that make them MOBAs, like the lanes, well, all I really know is lanes. But like There are things in MOBAs that if you don't have them, then they're not a MOBA, right? Yeah. I guess subgenre does kind of describe it better.
But for me,
interesting.
But for me, I think what we're describing, like genuinely new genres, no. Like I think that video games and games in general, like chess and all that sort of stuff, have been out for a long time. So do I think there will be a completely new genre? No. I think there will be a fusion or a variation of existing genres. Like we just said, mm-hmm. LOL and Dota are based off of Warcraft 3. That's a subgenre of an existing genre. So like Rocket League is a soccer game with cars. That's an action racing sports game. Didn't exist until Rocket League, but it's a subgenre of multiple other genres. I think that if you take enough fusions of genres, you're going to create a new thing. So mm-hmm. I think the large genres are complete.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I still think there is possibly room for a new genre, but I couldn't tell you what it would be. Cause like when I think of the platformer, like when the platformer was first like created or whatever, like there was nothing like it. Like somebody saw the limitations they had with their hardware and was like, what can we do with the tools that we're given? And they made a platformer. And I mean, we still have platformers today being made, and they had to start somewhere. And like, that's, I don't feel like a platformer is something that would naturally like, it doesn't seem that something that would naturally like be created, that would naturally like come with video games. I feel like that's something that you had to like think up. Mm-hmm. Like even like 3D platformers, which I guess is a subgenre of a platformer, but like an RPGs or something that, I mean, I guess RPGs would eventually get created if they weren't created back when they were. But
well, RPGs are based off of Dungeons and Dragons and these board yeah. games and stuff like that, and those were literally the exact same systems just digitized. So,
but like, even like yeah. even Dungeons and Dragons, like if whoever created Dungeons and Dragons didn't create it originally. Like, I feel like it's something that would have eventually been created, or at least some form of it, like an RPG would have eventually been created. But I'm trying to think of stuff like that, stuff that wouldn't, that genres that exist right now that you think couldn't have already, or couldn't have eventually been created. So, like, to me, like, the platformer comes to mind of, like, who would have thought of a platformer? And maybe that's just me. Maybe that is like a thing that possibly could have been created by anyone, but I don't know. It seems like such an abstract kind of genre in terms of, like, it's something that didn't really exist before it was made. Like, it kind of just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, sports, of course, is a genre of game that would have eventually been created if nobody ever created it before.
Racing, a pretty obvious thing.
Like, we have, like, a bunch of obvious genres, but I don't know. Like, strategy, I feel like it's kind of natural. Like, somebody would have eventually made it. But I feel like there's things out there that might not be as obvious that people could create. I don't know what other example I can give of that that exists right now, but I feel like there's something out there.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, I feel you.
Our last question comes from Danny Juarez at Stoked Danny on Twitter.
Hey, yes, Danny.
Why did No Man's Sky lie to me?
I have this answer. Me. Can I go?
Ian.
Dr. Bless, can I go?
I just chose you.
Oh, okay. In this scenario, I'm a student and you called on me.
Yes.
It's pretty much kind of... I feel bad because we kind of answered Danny's questions at the top of the show. But pretty much... It's all about expectation. I went into the game not expecting anything, and I took the game for what it was. So as new things were coming at me, I was like, wow, that's interesting. Wow, that's cool. Look at this alien. Look at this. Okay, I'm the researcher, so I'm going to do this. And then, you know, I made more of the game than what was there. But for someone who saw the E3, saw this, you know, saw all the stuff that Angry Joe saw, and then they play the same game as me, they're going to be furious because they were promised something completely different. You know? So, why did No Man's Sky lie to you? The short of it is to make money, and they were most likely pressured by Sony Studios to deliver a game that was never their intention in the first place. There's a lot of rumors that No Man's Sky was originally going to be a free-to-play game, similar to a Minecraft, that would have gone into an alpha, a beta, and then evolved in the similar market of that way. But PlayStation saw the potential in the game and then put more pressures on them, gave them more money, gave them backing, like gave them marketing backing, and that pressured the studio to make the game that we see today. So they lied to you because they had to, because of monetary reasons and because of pressures from up top. But in the end of the day, it's a pretty good game. I wouldn't say it's anything less than good, and you just need to go into it with the proper perspective.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, that was gonna be my answer, actually, is marketing. And I blame, like, people are pointing fingers. Like, people point fingers at Sean Murray, people point fingers at the gamers, of, like, in the question of who hyped this game up, and, like, and whose fault is it that this game is failing to meet so many people's expectations. And I point my finger at Sony. I think it's kind of obvious that Sony saw this game, saw its reveal at the Video Game Awards in the end of 2013, early 2014, I can't remember what year. They saw that, and they saw the reception it got, and they saw that, hey, this is a game that's coming out on PlayStation that we could take and we can make people excited for, like, even more excited for, and make it like a PlayStation title. You know, kind of like I was gonna say kind of like Until Dawn, but they hyped this up way more than Until Dawn. That reveal trailer, I don't think, did No Man's Sky any favors either. Because, like, the trailer was so good. Like, I saw that trailer and I was like, yo, this game is about to be off the chain. Did anybody else see that? But, I mean, that was a reveal trailer. And so, like, of course you're not going to expect a game to be like it was in the reveal trailer. But over time, like, I feel like the bar just kept getting pushed, like, further and further. And the quote-unquote, like, gameplay trailers that they're showing later, and, like, the amount of times that this game was showing up at press conferences, they were hyping this game up and building this game to be like a PlayStation game that was going to be amazing. And specifically like the gameplay trailer from E3 2014, which of course is 2 years ago, so of course it's going to be different. But like that trailer showed the game is something a lot different than it is now. And that's because of marketing. That's because they want you to buy the game and they want you to buy into the idea that PlayStation has the best exclusives. And yeah, so it's a sad thing. I feel your pain, Danny. I didn't even finish my answer, but I kind of just got into like the mindset of I'm really sad about what happened with this game. But yeah, I'm really tired.
Sadness.
I'm really tired.
Me too. We ready to end this?
We ready to end this. You're going back to sleep, and I have stuff to do. Otherwise, I would go back to sleep.
That's actually a lie. I'm not gonna go back to sleep. I'm gonna go get some curry, and then I'm gonna go play some Deus Ex. I've decided.
Actually, I think my plans for after this podcast may have gotten canceled. It seems like, because I have not gotten the text back. But we shall see. If you're listening,
and you want to make plans with us, text us.
And you want to make plans with us, text us. What stuff do we need to plug, Ian? Let's plug. I'm doing Extra Life. I'm going to be doing Extra Life with the homie Alex Van Aken.
The homie.
I'm sure. The homie. I'm flying down to Colorado.
I heard, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Got my ticket. I'm ready to go. Got my fundraiser page set up, and it's just the default page. I didn't add anything because I spent all my time doing that stuff last year.
Yeah.
And don't feel like doing it again because I'm lazy. But yeah, donate to my Extra Life. It's to benefit the children.
The big beautiful kids.
I want to get the big beautiful kids, and I want to defeat Alex. I don't know if we have a competition going on, but I'm sure like we'll have a competition going on. So donate to me so that a bad thing can happen to Alex or a great thing can happen to me. I don't know. But yeah, do that. Also, you can find me on Twitter at @BlessingJr. That is at @BlessingJR. And on OKBeast.com, the OKBeast podcast is a gaming-centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. If you like that, subscribe to us on your podcast service of choice. Visit OKBeast.com and follow at OKBeast now on Twitter. This has been episode 6. Thank you for listening.